Hello, it's Friday, June 23rd, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. We're not going to goof around today. We have as our special guest Mr. Frank Whalen, who hosts a show called Frankly Speaking Radio on RBN. His website can be found at
franklyspeakingradio.com.
And Frank is one of the gutsiest radio show hosts out there. He's knowledgeable about so many different areas. He has the fastest moving show in radio, 4 hours every morning. We don't know how he does it. He has a very clear understanding of what's right and wrong, which is very important.
He's just a good guy.
Yeah. And best of all, like Lisa said, he's a good person, and in this day and age, that means a lot to us. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Frank Whalen to Wing TV. How you doing, Frank?
Hi, Frank.
Doing wonderful. Thank you again, as always.
Well, Frank, before we jump into it, again, give everybody your website address. Let them know how they can find, you know, your show, when it's on, and all the particulars.
Okay, it's Monday to Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Central Time. Can be heard online at www.rbnlive.com. That's the network website, and I believe we also piggyback their feed at franklyspeakingradio.com.
All right, very good. Now, Frank, I had a whole list of questions here for you, but I'm going to jump off of those right off the get-go.
Wonderful.
and just wing it here for a minute. Last night, we watched Professor Jim Fetzer. He was on Hannity and Combs. Now, there's been quite a few other people that have made the mainstream now. There was Jimmy Walter was on, Professor Stephen Jones. There was
Alex Jones.
There was a big article in the New York Times. There was Charlie Sheen, and on. We were even on Lionel's show up on WOR. And all of these people are talking about controlled demolition. They're talking about government conspiracy. They're saying Osama bin Laden, 19 Arab hijackers or terrorists didn't do all this. What I want to run by you, Frank, is why is the mainstream media and the powers that be, why are they allowing this information out there, especially when former CIA director William Colby said the mainstream media never lets anything in unless they want it in there? Why are they putting this information out there?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I got to admit, if I was a cartoon, I'd have a question mark above my head most of the time. What I have determined to be a very likely possibility is that we're in for something else.
Uh-huh.
Every time something big has come out in the media, it's always usurped with this brilliant strategy of misdirection. And if it gains any sort of traction, what we're going to see is something else to come along to sort of usurp that interest. Perfect example, when William Cohen basically admitted that scalar weapons do exist and that scalar weapons can affect the weather and hurricanes and earthquakes and volcanoes, he mentioned that terrorist groups have these things, and then I believe it was the next day, if not that day, when the Monica Lewinsky thing broke.
Mm-hmm.
And every day this week we've seen something like, Karl Rove is not going to be indicted. Oh, wait, President Bush is giving a speech. Let's switch over to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very minute attention given to real stories these days.
Yeah, because I ask this because there's a writer named Michael A. Hoffman, and he writes about what he calls the cryptocracy, and he says one of the stages in the New World Order becoming or realizing their ultimate goals is being able to come right out and state what they were doing and seeing what the American public or the world in general will do. And he's saying, look, they're laying this all out now. They're laying it all out in front of us. And it's even a bigger insult if they lay it all out and people do nothing than just simply to be lied to.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's one of the things they do is sort of a sociological test to find out, you know, have we fallen deeper to sleep or have we woken up a little bit?
Uh-huh.
The other thing I think that's intriguing, and I was discussing this yesterday on the show, people would come up to me and say, people are waking up, and I agree that's true. The problem is how strange that they tend to wake these people up during an election year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Every 2 years, there's a little bit of an awakening, and then people say, well, I know the truth now, and I'm going to go to the polls, and I'm going to put somebody better in there. So they do that. So I think this is a furtherance of what we discussed, which is that the midterms are going to swing to the Democrat side. In retaliation, I think you're going to see more and more of the Republican agenda taking us into conflict. And, of course, there's North Korea now in the news.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed Venezuela. Iran has never officially been off the table. So that's all going on, too. So, you know, throw us into a war, start a draft, put Hillary Clinton in there to teach those Bush guess what? She changes us into a socialistic form of government and keeps the draft.
Yeah.
Right. Benjamin Netanyahu was also on Hannity and Combs last night, and he kept repeating over and over how the first thing the United States needs to do is make sure Iran is not given the capability or any chance of making or pursuing nuclear weapons program. I mean, he kept reinforcing it, and Victor and I were talking about it after, and tell him what right. you were saying.
Well, I was saying that basically it's like if you're going to fight somebody and you have a baseball bat in your hand and they have nothing, you're always going to have the advantage until that guy also gets a baseball bat. And it seemed like Netanyahu was stressing this so much that they cannot, under any circumstances, get nukes. And, you know, Frank, it's like China doesn't want to get into a war with Iran. Russia doesn't. Europe doesn't. 99% of the people in America don't. It seems like the only country that wants to get into a war with them is Israel.
Well, and then when you factor in the Bilderbergs, you know, the European Bilderbergs say they don't want to fight a war for Israel, and how Netanyahu kept downplaying the fact that a war with Iran would be protecting Israel. It would be protecting everybody, he says.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of all this?
I think that you've really struck a nerve here, because I think this comes on the tail end of a very significant event which got very little attention in the mainstream, and that is the document found, it was found or admittedly found after Zarqawi had been killed, supposedly, in the official death. They had found the document, I think, a week before in one of his safe houses. Now, I don't know if you guys got to read this or not, but there's very, very significant points being made in there. The strange thing is, here you've got a guy who heads up an organization, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, who depend on volunteers. There's no conscription in Al-Qaeda because there's no state, there's no citizenship, mm-hmm. anything like that. So you have to join. Why would a guy whose sole membership comes from volunteers, why would he pen a lengthy report saying how poorly Al-Qaeda is doing?
Huh.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The other thing that's significant about it, there is no typical Al-Qaeda-related terminology in this document. It's written from almost a legalistic point of view, saying, like a State of the Union address, that there's no hope. He's saying, gosh, these Iraqi National Guardsmen are doing so good, we can't kill these Americans anymore. And, I mean, every single point that's made in there is detrimental to the Al-Qaeda movement and positive to the Bush administration in their objectives and their stated victories.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very significant. The other thing that's intriguing about it is they said, here's how we can turn the organization around. And what they say is, if they facilitate a war with Iran in the United States, then all of our troops will pull out of Iraq and they'll be victorious.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
When you start thinking about that, all of a sudden, everything we've heard about Iran having weapons of mass destruction, oh no, we've been bamboozled. It was Al-Qaeda who were planting these stories.
Mm.
First of all, how does Al-Qaeda have the resources to alter the mainstream media? And if your mortal enemy, Al-Qaeda, the war on terror, if they come forward and say, we've got some information for you, why would we believe them?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
What we've got is a saving face measure in place, if we need it, for the president of Iran, who I still think is playing for our side, and in the Bush administration, which probably terrifies the Israelis.
Uh-huh. Now, the big news that was breaking last night, that there were seven individuals arrested in Miami. They were part of a so-called jihad, and supposedly they had plans to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago. But, coincidentally, Frank, they were working with undercover FBI agents.
What do you know?
When they thought they were working with Al-Qaeda. Well, it's admitted now that there was no direct ties to Al-Qaeda, and the authorities said that they were never close to doing any of this stuff, blowing up the Sears Tower or any of that. So I know we talked about this for about 30 seconds before the show started. Give us your thoughts on not only the seven arrests in Miami, but take it a step further then.
Let me add to that. The terror risk is still elevated, Frank.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this is a very intriguing twist, and I think this also plays on an event that transpired in Iraq last week, which was the kidnapping of those two soldiers. What we see now is, much like the arrests in Canada, okay, that, you know, there's a lot to that, you know what I'm talking about, the fertilizer and these groups of mm-hmm. people up there. What we saw with that was, that story was leaked out. It wasn't supposed to get out. And I attribute whomever was a member of the RCMP who floated that story out to the good sources. But the point is, that story was blown. Now, there was a story that came out in the Canadian news in May that said Al-Qaeda is going to strike Canada now. They keep mentioning attention in Canada, Canada, Canada. So, you know, we really have to start ramping up our anti-terrorism measures. And it's firm. You know, we are a target now. Okay, then, you know, 2 weeks to a month later, they arrest all these people in Canada who were going to acquire all this fertilizer and make explosives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that story was leaked out. Because in the first story, the one from May, they basically said, we have no credible threats and no credible information at this time, which is a lie. Because when this story came out and they arrested these guys, they said they've been conducting that investigation for 2 years.
Hmm.
Very, very significant. So I think there was a staged terrorist attack that fell apart. Well, then we have the situation in Miami. Well, these groups of people, like you said, potentially some government involvement with their activities, which who knows what happened. We also know that they are militant Islamic, but according to themselves, their belief structure is a combination of Islam and Christianity. So now what we do is we have an effort to demonize Christianity mm-hmm. to a certain extent. Now, I'm not the one who's going to run around saying, we need this, we need that. But understand what they're saying. If you're not a member of mainstream church, then you're a renegade Christian
yeah.
who can possibly conduct all these different things. Now, I don't know if you guys heard me talking about this, but according to rumors cited in the Washington Post and Newsweek, they claim that Supreme Court justices Samuel Alito, Antonin Scalia, and Clarence Thomas are all Opus Dei.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
And so is Sam Brownback. So, mm-hmm. and he's a potential frontrunner for the Republican Party. These people are instrumental in the Constitution Reformation Act of 2004, which would put us into a theocracy. Very, very significant. But anyway, getting back to the other things that we're seeing with this terrorist group, now we've got a big arrest in Miami. Even though it doesn't have a whole lot of validity to it, people are going to say, wow, they are keeping us safe.
Yeah.
And this ties in with the two soldiers who were kidnapped in Iraq last week. I don't know about you guys, but it rang hollow to me the whole time.
You know what? Yeah. This Miami story makes me think that we're going to be seeing another Tom Flacco fairy tale down the pike.
It's very possible.
Well, I mean, the point, though, and that's a good one you made, Frank, is that they keep ratcheting it up, or they keep it persistent, that
right.
they have to protect us, and that this threat is ever-present, it's well, ominous, it never ends.
Absolutely, and this is what it comes down to. So they have these two soldiers, they were kidnapped, and they said they were kidnapped on Friday. They admitted it on Monday. Okay, now what's interesting about this? They're two guys, okay? They were kidnapped, they're both privates, first class. Okay, they get kidnapped, and then they turn out this amazing force. I don't know if you guys saw the stats on it. 8,000 troops,
mm-hmm.
jet fighters, helicopters, dive teams, and boats to find two privates first class.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
this rings like the Jessica Lynch story, does
uh-huh.
it not?
Yeah.
What
Whoa.
Happens is you've got Caldwell. He comes out and does a press conference. We are going to search for these guys until their status has been confirmed one way or the other. Well, gosh, that's interesting. And then, you know, like a day or two later, they find the bodies. They've been mutilated. They've been tortured.
Mm.
And they were booby-trapped. Now, what does this have to do? Well, after the Zarqawi thing, I went on the air and I said, this is a great thing, because here we've got the enemy is Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Well, we got Saddam, and now they killed Zarqawi.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a success. That sounds like we've removed all the dangerous elements from the top, from Iraq. It's time to come out, pull out. Well, then you see senators and whatnot, they start saying, we need to set a timetable, we need to do this. Well, then they come out with the new leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Right.
Got his
yeah.
name. It's an alias. They've got his picture. You see the token unibrow.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out and they say, we don't know his real name. But we do know that he's an expert in explosives. How do they know that?
Yeah.
He's got his
yeah,
picture,
don't
he's
know
got
his name.
Background, but you don't...
Yeah.
It's preposterous.
Bless
but
Frank.
Anyway, you find these two bodies, and they've been booby-trapped. Oh, no. Al-Qaeda in Iraq, they've got a great, strong leader who's a hands-on guy. There's still danger.
Yeah.
See, you start to see, now we can't pull out. Now we've got a new enemy, a boogeyman, a name and a face.
Mm-hmm.
And now we find out that Al-Qaeda is infiltrating everywhere.
And
they're
plus,
in the U.S., they're in Canada.
And plus
all
he
this
was,
ties in.
Yeah, and plus he was the one that supposedly slit their throats directly with his own
yeah,
hands, so
exactly.
they elevate him. But well, Frank, since we're on this topic of Iraq, let's keep it going here. We had this Haditha massacre last fall, okay? Seven
yeah.
Marines, a Navy corpsman, killed 24 Iraqi citizens. They could possibly face the death penalty. Just, oh, and the big cover-up and so forth. Then there was another guy, that there's a cover-up about, that he bound and dragged an Iraqi citizen, planted evidence, killed him. This is the second time in a week.
Same old.
Yeah, second time in a week that our forces are charged with premeditated murder. We have both sides of the story now. The Republicans, how great it's going, things are superb. The Democrats saying how awful. How much worse or how much better or what the hell is going on in Iraq?
Well, I think what you see here in all these examples that you've given out is an appearance of, oh my gosh, our troops are out of control. They're just over there assassinating people right and left. What you guys have seen and what I have seen and what some of your viewers have probably seen is the fact that in every one of these circumstances, high-level payments were authorized to the victims in question.
Uh-huh.
Indicating that there was a cover-up in place. Now, if, as we talk about, you can get the appearance of they send this massive manhunt out to find two kidnapped soldiers who were privates first class. Again, we got to stress that. When we had an abduction in Iraq in April, I think it was April of this year, and Al-Qaeda released a videotape showing him dead, and the Army ruled it inconclusive and left it at that. Inconclusive for a sergeant who was kidnapped, but let's go and conclude definitively about two privates and see what they did. What you've got here in this whole grand scheme of things is they're trying to make the case that they care and whatnot in order to let you think that they're not involved, that these groups are not simply following orders. That's why these payouts have been authorized, indicating that, you know, from the top on down, everything they're doing, these assassinations, the kidnappings, the murders, the cover-ups, is all instrumental from the top.
Frank.
Now, if you look at Iraq is pretty much a street-to-street battle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Considering it's
taking place in cities and in towns and in villages and in, you know, communities like that. Well, you know, we've all talked about it. I mean, this is the best way to gauge how far someone is willing to go to follow an order. And how does that apply to American citizens on American soil when we've got National Guardsmen and other things pulled out of Iraq and sent to American soil, either on the border or in New Orleans? Which I think is very, very significant. The violence that they're trying to counter in New Orleans that took place last weekend,
mm-hmm.
that have authorized, I think, 300 National Guardsmen, was basically two incidents. A man was stabbed over a beer, and a car full of teenagers were gunned down. There were five teenagers. Six deaths in the span of a weekend in a town or a city the size of New Orleans that has always been violent and always been dangerous is nothing new.
Right.
But because in our minds, we equate New Orleans with hurricanes, with National Guardsmen, you can keep deploying the National Guard to conduct law enforcement activities without anybody thinking otherwise.
And just unfold it across America then at some point.
Absolutely.
It seems like Iraq is totally chaos, despite what we hear on the mainstream media, and it's even implausible that they have control within the international green zone there. But which Iraq do you think's worse, Frank? Bush's Iraq or Saddam's Iraq?
And plus, before you answer, let me tell you about a little conversation we overheard last Friday. Is there someone talking to another gentleman? We were at this concert, and he was saying, like, do you really think we're leaving Iraq? He says, we have all these military bases, plus they're building this huge embassy, Frank, 104 acres. It's going to cost $592 million, 15-foot-thick walls. We're not going anywhere.
No. Definitely we're not going anywhere. And the interesting thing, before the al-Zarqawi victory was announced, there was a story that came out, and I believe it was Capitol Hill Blue, it may have been editor or publisher, in which troops on the ground were saying that the Iraq war was quote-unquote lost. That was in the headline. Okay, so that's indicative of where they're at. The other thing was is the U.S. Embassy had, I think it was the Washington Post, I could be incorrect there, but they had acquired a memo from the U.S. Embassy, and it was signed by the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, at least his name is at the bottom, indicating he at least saw the thing. And what this said was is how horrific the conditions are for people, for Iraqis working in the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
They can't bring cell phones home. A couple of them have been threatened. Several have been kidnapped. They can't be called in on their day off because it'll ring a bell with people in their community who will rat them out and they'll be killed. They've been sexually harassed, all sorts of things. All of these, you know, these two stories in and of themselves are indicative of the fact that we've lost. So the story comes out saying that we've lost. Then they capture al-Zarqawi. Then Zarqawi append a document saying what a shambles al-Qaeda is in,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then, of course, you've got the memo, as I mentioned, and then they have to keep, you know, floating out these victories, supposedly, all over the place.
Yeah, you're right.
Or that they
it's like the war on drugs.
Leave.
It never ends. War on terror never ends.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, Frank, we had Bill Brumbaugh on our show Tuesday.
Fantastic.
He is a great guy. And he made a comment at one point during the interview. He said, we asked him about Iran. And he said, you know, a couple of months ago, he says, I would have said it was almost a certainty that we're going into Iran. He says, now I'm not so sure. Also, with North Korea, who you mentioned earlier, these ICBM missile tests. Now, is this another boogeyman? So I'm going to put the two questions together, Iran and North Korea. Where are we going?
Wow, that's a tough one. I say neither. Venezuela is where
Venezuela.
We're going next.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that?
I think we're going to be, they've already been destabilizing down there.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the free trade area of the Americas fall apart because of Hugo Chavez. And I really think that given the war games that they've scheduled and the different things like that, they already have, you know, operatives on the ground, and they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
The State Department volunteered to send U.S. troops into Colombia to deal with narco-terrorism. I mean, we've got bases in other countries down there that are not for humanitarian purposes, although that's the stated objective. These runways are way too big. The buildings are way too expansive. They hold tens of thousands of troops. Given the price of oil, gasoline, and whatnot, what we've got is on a baseline, with the price of oil being $20 a barrel, Saudi Arabia has the number one reserves on the planet, supposedly.
Uh-huh.
Iran coming in number two. When you take the average price of a barrel of oil and you up it to about 50, which is far below where it is now, all of a sudden, Venezuela has more oil reserves than every other country on the planet combined.
That's right, and they've said that.
Do you have more questions on Iraq?
No, go ahead.
A little closer to home, Frank. Did you hear about this? Jeffrey Skilling, that former Enron guy, he's asking to have his sentence overturned. He wants either a retrial or he wants the verdict overturned. Do you think he's going to end up skating?
I think he will, and one of the things that I had noticed was the day of sentencing, which you guys probably have noticed as well, was stated for September 11th.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, well, gosh, there sure is a lot of things going on September 11th that they can cover, anniversaries and whatnot, gatherings, protests, fights between the police and people there exercising their civil liberties, all sorts of things to distract from, you know, this guy getting off. So I think they'll deny the retrial. They will sentence him, I think, or something. Something will happen. He'll get off. And it won't be covered because, again, the misdirection that we might see on September 11th.
He was convicted of 19 of 28 counts, and he wants it overturned. He says there was insufficient legal evidence presented against him.
Unbelievable. Now, Frank, we like to follow up on things, and we have to give you credit. The last time you were on this show, we were talking about illegal immigration. That was when it was really hot and heavy, and you were right. You said that this particular legislation that they had in the pipeline right then. You said it was doomed to failure deliberately, and when you look at all the rhetoric coming from both sides of it, well, now we see no legislation, no bills, the status quo is going to prevail.
Mm-hmm.
Was it all by design?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's more election year pandering, and they don't quite know how to gauge the minds of the people because the minds of the people are split. But again, you've got a little bit of a Catholicism influence here in stirring up the illegals and fighting for their authority. So I think they will get it at some point, but I think it's going to be a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is even if they do pass this amnesty that's not an amnesty bill, you still have to put all these people in a queue. Now they're here illegally, but potentially legally, but they have to work and all that. And I think they can authorize 2 million illegals a year to get legalized status, which means that basically with 15... Well, 12 to 25 million illegals in this country, they're still going to be illegal for years and years and years, which keeps, of course, the market down as far as paying these people what they're worth as far as their time and their effort.
Exactly.
And, of course, they won't re-up the minimum wage as well, and I think that has something to do with it also. There's a lot to this, and the other thing that's really interesting, if you look at the draft bill that was floated out a few years ago and you read through it, you'll find out that you don't have to be a citizen to be drafted. You have to be a resident.
Well, we've been saying the same thing here. We have a ready-made army.
Well, they just want bodies. Yeah.
You want to fast track your legalized status? Go ahead and join. It's very interesting.
You just have to have a pulse, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a report out.
Stand there and get killed.
Yeah, really.
So we can get some sympathy for the Mexican
cannon
people.
Fodder. The middle-class neighborhoods are being I guess they're shrinking. They're disappearing faster than the middle class itself. Did you read this report on the mainstream?
I have not.
It says here they're being replaced with either poor or rich neighborhoods, and the economic divide is widening now. And these communities, even in prosperous neighborhoods where they have a preserved, intact, thriving downtown section, it's happening there too. And there's a hollowing out effect that's happening. And L.A., I guess, is considered the most hollowed out area in the country.
I believe that. You know, here in Northwest Arkansas, if you look at the average, the mean income of any resident of the state of Arkansas, it's on the low side. Here in Northwest Arkansas, there's been a building boom, as there has been all over the country, with all of these houses being built that they're just not selling.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't less than about $200,000 in this area, which is preposterous.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
That's interesting. Now, Frank, we have to look into Big Brother a little bit.
Okay.
And there was an article from the St. Petersburg Times. The title was "No Cash, No Card, Just Stick in Your Finger."
Mm-hmm.
And this is at a coast-to-coast family convenience store where what you're doing now is they have this biometric payment system. You just stick your finger into the scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said they're trying to do is put these in places like grocery stores, gas stations, convenience stores, high traffic areas to start getting people accustomed to this fact that they don't need cash anymore. They don't even need a debit card anymore.
Right.
Just put your finger in. And this is really one of the first systems in this country where this is happening. And I actually spoke with someone from Tampa this morning. They said they hadn't heard of it yet, but that's where we're moving.
They want people to give them the finger.
Well, I think you guys are right on point in bringing this up. This is also very significant. It also ties in with illegal immigration. I mean, the influx of illegal immigrations and the fear-mongering that they've fostered on one side of the issue has led to the construction of detainment facilities, the revamping and renovating these places,
mm-hmm.
and also a big standby contract in the event that we have a reason to incarcerate a vast number of people. Well, also, of course, I think Verichip has volunteered, saying, look, you know, we have the methodology to be able to track people coming into this country. Here's all you have to do. Also, we've seen sex offenders, which, you know, no sympathy whatsoever for these guys. But, you know, these people might have to wear an ankle bracelet for, you know, their entire life.
Let me ask you this, Frank.
Once they get out. And it's all designed to track and surveil. So when you go ahead and you start incorporating things like this into convenience stores, you can see it's designed. So that way the next time they try to float this thing out, let's say, in a big city,
uh-huh.
and there's a huge amount of outrage. You know, when the newspaper writes the story, they'll say, this thing has been well received.
Right.
This city, this city, this city, this city. Mm-hmm. They did the same thing with the body mass index testing in schools that we started, that was begun in Arkansas a few years ago. And we were on the air fighting it, you know, from day one. And, of course, when they floated the article out, they said, look, they're doing it in this state and this state.
Yeah.
It's working out really well. It's the same thing with this stuff. Now, to take it a step further, I heard from one of my listeners in North Carolina that she just got a bill for her dog. $30 a year you got to pay in taxes for your pet, per pet, so $30 a year per pet. And they got that information from their veterinarian,
mm-hmm.
who had to submit all this stuff of his records so they could start taxing this. Now take that a step further with the Animal Identification Act, where you're going to start chipping all the
uh-huh.
livestock and whatnot. Well, you
right.
can see that they just have to implement it in little communities. We saw it with the smoking ban in Northwest Arkansas, the most influential area of this state. You get it in there, and then you say, it's a smashing success.
Yeah.
Well, now they're going to pass it statewide. Once it goes statewide, then, of course, another state will do the same thing. And then they've got the ability to say, look, we've made it voluntary, not a community, then city, then state. And there's so many states that are doing this, that's the vast majority of the people in this country. So therefore, let's just make it mandatory. Same thing with the microchip when they start forcing it on all of us.
Mm-hmm. Why don't they start microchipping all the illegals? Then we can track where they are.
That's one of the ideas that's been floated out.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
I mean, rather than dogs and cats.
Well, I think they're already doing it in prisons. I think they're doing
yeah.
it
yeah.
Yeah.
in certain areas. So,
do you know how prevalent this microchip stuff is, this Verichip stuff is now? Because I know it was just in Florida a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all over the place. Of
uh-huh.
course, they've also made it seem in some of the mainstream accounts that this is the new trendy thing for the kids. Because in addition to that small little, you know, amount of resources devoted to keeping your information in there, it's super cool because you can swing your arm at the door and it unlocks. You can say, open
Well, and you know, Frank, up here at Penn State University, I'll hear the kids, you know, the college students, and they'll be like, my life is over. My life just ended. I'm like, how did your life end? It's like, well, I lost my cell phone. My life is over. Everything in my whole life is in my cell phone. Well, wouldn't it be convenient to just put a little chip in there so, you know, they can just have their little beeper and
We don't have people who live here that don't have cell phones plastered to one side of their head. Yeah. It's sort of like an extension of the head.
Yeah, it's a second ear. They're just all on it. But let's look at something that happened today. It was just announced that Norman Mineta is going to leave the Bush administration. Last week, Robert Zoellick, who is the number two man under Condi Rice, he's leaving.
God, all the rats are jumping ship.
Yeah, Bush's speechwriter, whose name I can't recall right now, he just announced that he's leaving. And I was thinking about this, Frank, that do you know that we're only a year and a half into Bush's second term? That means we have 2.5 more years of this administration. How the hell are we going to endure it?
Well, and worse than
that, it seems like eternity.
If he ever declares a state of emergency, does that mean he gets to hang around longer?
Yes, it does. Here's the interesting thing about that. I mean, you look at the bird flu. When I drive into work, I listen to talk radio, and talk radio at 2 a.m. is a little on the thin side. They have commercial breaks, obviously, they have to contend with. And what they do is they throw all their PSAs into that time frame. You know, nobody wants to be advertising at 2 a.m., so they mm-hmm. throw in all their public service announcements to fill time. And they're still running, not through lack of options, I'm sure. They're still running the 36,000 people a year in America die from regular flu. If you're born and still living, you need a vaccine, and they go through mm-hmm. and make the case for all these different things. So 36,000 people a year in America die from the regular flu. We haven't even had 250 deaths from the bird flu around the planet, but they're still hyping this up.
Uh-huh.
One of my guests who's privy to the federal, I guess you could say, law enforcement agenda for the bird flu stated that when this thing happens, when, it will be turned over to the World Health Organization to deal with in America. Now that's, as you guys know, the United Nations. So we know about the detention facilities. We know about the CDC's SARS preparedness plan, which talks about electronic tracking and tagging mm-hmm. of anyone who has been infected or potentially infected. So think about this. Let's say you guys have a kid in fifth grade, okay, and you're sick. Well, guess what? Your kid is potentially infected. So we're all of those students, therefore all of their families, the teacher, therefore all the other teachers. And you can see that they'll be locking down a whole community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that's going to play an instrumental role in dealing with a really bad bird flu scenario is the faith-based groups. And one of the ones that was thrown out as being in charge of this whole thing is the Lucius Trust.
Mm-hmm.
When you start factoring all that in and you find out, okay, these are organizations that are getting a lot of money from the Bush administration, uh-huh. a lot of practice from Katrina and whatnot.
Right, right.
You start seeing all these things. And then, of course, the federal bird flu plan, the pandemic plan, 232 pages. The last four pages talk about the Insurrection Act and how they can basically go into any home they want and acquire anything they need, be it food, weaponry, water, medicine, things like that. And if they basically gun you down, then you can fight it in court, of course. But otherwise, if you try to stop them from doing this, you can go to jail or be fined an exorbitant amount of money, which, as we know, you won't have. So they'll just confiscate everything you've got and put you in these camps. So it's very interesting to see where this is going, because they put every single bit of legislation they could possibly want or need to deal with the bird flu or any sort of situation here in America, and it pretty much guarantees that Tommy Franks' prediction from Cigar Aficionado magazine in 2002-2003, whatever that was, will come to pass.
Uh-huh. And if they do gun you down and kill you, Frank, I guess that's just called collateral damage.
That's right. That's all we are.
And it'll be Al-Qaeda.
Collateral citizens.
Yeah. Well, Frank, I have one more question for you, but before we jump into that, let everybody know once again how they can find your website, how they can hear your radio show, and everybody out there. If you're up in the morning from 6 to 10 Central, 7 to 11 Eastern Time, tune in to Frankly Speaking Radio. It's the best out there.
Don't miss it.
Yeah, this is what Patriot Radio, alternative media, this is what it's supposed to be. So, Frank, give everyone the particulars.
Wow, you're too kind. Basically, as you stated, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, 6 to 10 Central, rbnlive.com. You can listen to it on the Internet. You can listen to it on the satellite. All the details are included at that website. And then, of course, you can go to my website at
Now, one of the stories that kind of floated under the radar in the last couple of days was Rick Santorum. He's our fine representative here up in Pennsylvania. And him and a guy named Peter Hextra came out, and they said, well, we found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
He's living in an alternate universe.
I'm telling you, this ties in exactly with all the things we've talked about, the Zal Zarqawi letter. I mean, this shows it was true. Every single thing that they floated out is said, this is how it is, and we said, that's nonsense. Now they're coming back and finding out all the proof. So think about it. I mean, we went in there to liberate the Iraqi people. Are they liberated? No. But now, according to Al Zarqawi, the people are great, and we got to win them over to our side, but we're getting our butts kicked by this great Iraqi army and whatnot. And then we find out, well, what about weapons of mass destruction? That was a lie. No, it's true.
Yep.
Look, we found them.
Bush isn't even saying that anymore.
Yeah, the weapons inspector who went in there, he refutes this story upside down and sideways.
Yeah, because it didn't take long for the DOD to come in and refute this. And all it was really was this degraded pre-1991 munitions. But Rick Santorum, he's like a psychopath. And
he's like an idiot.
Yeah, and it's funny, Frank, because he's running this year. He's up for election, and he's going against the former Pennsylvania governor's son, who is pro-life and pro-guns. So it's not going to be like this typical Republican versus Democrat, because this Democrat is siding on the same issues as Santorum has, so he doesn't have those things to use against him, and it's going to be very interesting to see if he survives this year or not.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's the case with all these things. They're looking for things to campaign on. They're like, immigration, I don't know what to do. You know, one religious group is telling me this thing, and then other people are telling me something else. Where's my funding coming from? You know, in addition to the Catholic Church, the ADL is involved.
Uh-huh.
The ADL is funding trips to Israel for our law enforcement.
That's right.
Law
that's
enforcement,
right.
Not military. Law enforcement to go over to Israel and train under the IDF, the most moral military in the world.
Just what we need. Yeah, he said that. He said they're the most moral military in the world. Can you believe it? While they're engaged in a Holocaust on the Palestinians.
And they killed like 10 people the day before that. They killed like 4 the day after that, 7 the day after that, and 3, I think, yesterday or the day after. So, you know, it's all sorts of different things going on. But when you look at this, look, they have to try to make the case for Iran, and they can do that by the hindsight and the ability to plant things in Iraq and say, look, we found them. It's only taken us this many years, this many inspections, this many countries have signed off saying there's nothing here, and we have found them. So some Iraqi child was running along playing soccer, tripped over a bomb. Oh, there it is. We didn't know. Yeah. Now this validates everything we might want to do with Iran, which, of course, Iran is whose agenda? It's Israel. So look at it that way and say, who is Santorum getting his money from?
Oh, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, Frank, these are certainly interesting times, aren't they?
Unfortunately, I think that's a curse in Chinese culture.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say.
I think in our culture,
find the Chinese person who cursed us and calm down.
Yeah, I mean, I could go for a little bit of boredom once in a while, I think, but it
would
never end.
I would love it if we could all be out of a job and we could just go and live the American dream, which is spending our time and our resources in any way that we'd like. But unfortunately, the truth has called the great people like you to the forefront to say, you know, by myself or with others, I'm going to stand. And you're doing it. And I respect you guys like you could not even imagine.
Well, Frank,
respect you as well.
You know, having Bill Brumbaugh on Tuesday and you today, I mean, we just covered the whole spectrum of what's going on.
We're just really glad you're out there, Frank.
Yeah, and it's so great to be able to throw this stuff against the wall and know that you know not only what's going on, but able to run with it and add even more to it. So everybody out there, RBN Live, Monday through Friday in the mornings, franklyspeakingradio.com. Frank, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We think the world of you.
And have a great weekend.
Vice versa. God bless you guys.
All right. Take care. We'll talk soon, okay? We'll be back on Monday. Until then, enjoy your weekend and keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you on Monday.